How would you describe Stickmen?
It's like a very modern version of a chamber group, a chamber trio. Like it's rock music with, you know, coming both from a classical compositional side as well as a jazzy improvisational side. And it's kind of like a musical outfit that sits in between all, you know, in between all the chairs, you know, like that's kind of like how I would describe it, you know. And it's a very loud band. Stickmen is loud, and Stickmen is a very experienced, you know, a band with many years of experience, I guess, like almost 200 years of experience, you know, yes, among us. So
wow.
not really, because I'm only 49, but
right. So you're the youngest member of the band.
It's really, I have to say, it's really pretty special, because the people come for the experience of experiencing something that they don't necessarily expect. So they don't really ask us to play a specific tune or whatever. They come for what we stand for.
Yes.
And I think that's amazing. Like, I have to say, you know, this opportunity to play with Pat and Tony came pretty late in life for me. I was 38 when I started playing with them. So, but it's a real privilege, I have to say, to be able to go on a stage and to be allowed to do whatever we want, and people will enjoy it. You know?
And you're certainly playing with some monster players.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like Tony has been, and both Pat and Tony have been playing professionally since their early teens. And so, you know, like Tony is not necessarily like a great teacher in the sense that he acts as a teacher or instructor, but he just kind of like breathing in what he does as I'm on with him has really given me a lot. And same is true with Pat, obviously.
It's got to be a terribly inspirational experience. You mentioned improvisation. How much of Stickmen's music is improvised, and how much is worked out in advance?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I mean, we have written pieces, and we do play written pieces. But I'd say, like, if you're really asking me for percentages here, I'd say it is kind of like 50-50. Even when performing a piece that is fully written, there is this freedom to, you know, within the framework of the notes, to improvise. And I always try to do that, you know. Like, it's just like Tony's bass lines are never the same twice. Like, he's always very, you know, varying them, even though the piece may be the same.
Yeah.
Right. And this is, and I try to do the same, you know. And it's and we do actually play fully improvised pieces as well, which people sometimes don't even get that those pieces are fully improvised. Yeah, so it's, I think, like, for me, like, I would say it's 50-50, really.
That has to keep things interesting for both the band and the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
What should our listeners know about the show you'll be playing at the Grey Eagle in Asheville on April 23rd?
Yeah, so Stickmen has been obviously full. You know, like, we weren't on stage for over 2 years. Like, we played, the last show we played together was in Japan in early 2020, and so we're bringing quite a bit of new material. We're planning to, you know, we'll have at least four new pieces, written pieces. We'll still be covering some King Crimson material, and there's also a new King Crimson piece that we're covering, and there will be improvisations, you know. So there's a lot of you know, like, after having, you know, been on the road like almost nonstop for 9 years, now it's kind of like time we're putting out a new EP. We have with 5 songs, and we do like jump right in, and we want to perform that music. So the shows are meant to be quite different from the ones that we used to play. Having said that, we haven't played in Asheville since 2011. Mokfest 2011 is when we last played in Asheville. So we're really looking forward to the show.
Pat and Tony, Stickman's other members, are also members of King Crimson, as you mentioned. How would you describe your relationship with that band?
You know, for me, the relationship goes back to the early 90s when I first took part in our Robert Fripp Guitar Craft course. So I was sort of like connected to Crimson even before Pat was connected to Crimson, which is funny to me, because I learned pieces like Thrack before Thrack was part of the King Crimson repertoire. And so, yeah, for me, it's like it's sort of part of my DNA. I remember when I first heard Elephant Talk, the King Crimson piece Elephant Talk, it sounded to me as, you know, still remember my thought was, ah, okay, so there are people that are actually making the music that I'm hearing in my head, right? So that's kind of like my relationship, you know. It's really like I found my tribe somehow. So.
Well, a new King Crimson documentary just debuted at South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. Have you seen it?
I've seen it, yeah.
Do you think it's an accurate portrayal of Robert Fripp?
I think the film is pretty good in the way that it allows for the listener to decide, and it kind of like offers not just one view. It actually offers a few, even opposing views on what one could be thinking about Robert. And I think that's kind of a clever thing, really.
Yeah.
Because people, you won't really leave the movie theater knowing more than before, in a way.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good film in that regard, that it doesn't really take away from the mystique at all.
It just adds to the mystique, it sounds like.
It does. Have you seen it?
I have not. How does your playing technique differ from other guitarists?
Well, first of all, I'm a touch player, and the touch technique is really very different. It has nothing to do with guitar playing. On a guitar, you fret with one hand, and you don't need to put the energy into the string to make it sound right. Mm-hmm. So I play with I tap with both hands, which means that each finger has to accelerate very quickly to put enough energy into the string so that it vibrates loudly and can be picked up by the magnetic pickups.
Yeah.
And it really is. Yeah, I mean, like, as somebody who's, you know, studied this for over 30 years, I can tell you it has nothing to do with guitar playing. So that's why it's a really completely different world.
Okay.
And I think, like, what happens is that the resolution, it's much more direct, because you don't have to coordinate two hands to produce a note. And so the resolution within that note that you're playing with one finger is much higher than on a regular guitar. So like any little bit of, let's say, call it intention, or like the finger shivering, or, you know, or you feeling it, kind of translates immediately into the tone, into the note. And that's what makes this instrument so incredibly powerful, especially if you're playing in a rock band and, you know, it's amplified, it's very loud. Mm-hmm. And you know, the sound that's actually coming from the instrument is very soft. So that really gives something really special to the sound. And it's very emotional, I find. Like, for me, playing that instrument is a very emotional outlet.
You're usually very prolific, working on several musical projects at the same time. Are you working on any other projects while you're touring?
Yes, I'm actually working on a project that is difficult. It's about the Brazilian rainforest, and everything has been recorded, and I'm going to mix this while on the road.
Wow.
So this is at least doing the initial work. Obviously, like, the mixes will have to get finished in the studio later, but that's sort of my plan. And, you know, since it's my 50th anniversary later this year, I'm planning to, you know, like after many years, to do like my first crowdfunding again, and I want to record an album where I play everything myself, so not just touch guitar, and sort of like in the old style of the early Mike Oldfield records.
Yes.
I want to make an album like that.
Cool.
And so that's my plan is to start composing that music while on the road.
Well, how do you prepare for a tour like this? What are you doing now to prepare?
Yeah, the funny thing is I haven't started yet, so I only have 4 days left, five days left. And the preparation is first to get the pedalboard programmed. It's kind of like the first step. Like I have some sort of idea which pieces we're gonna play, and then there are four or five new pieces that I will have to learn, which are technically challenging. In most cases, like pieces I've already played, it's just a matter of reminding myself of the parts. And since I keep a regular practice, I try to practice like up to 1.5 hours every day, so my fingers are limber. You know, there's no need to kind of reinstall that in my body. So it's more about refreshing my memory and to remember the pieces that I've already played, and then to find ways to play the parts that we have written for the new music. And that is kind of an interactive thing that really comes together once we're in the rehearsal space together. Because we may have to, with Pat and, Tony's instrument and mine, we both can play bass parts and, sort of like keyboard kind of parts and lead part. And we still need to decide in some places who's going to play what, who's going to cover which range. And so the real arrangement work will only happen once we're in the rehearsal space.
So rehearsals start in 4 days. How long will you rehearse?
It will be 2.5 days.
Oh, okay. That's pretty
which
cool.
Which is a lot for us.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. Usually we have an afternoon.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So and this new material requires quite a bit of work. So.
Progressive rock is relatively rare on American radio. I'm sure you know that. Fortunately, our local community station, Asheville FM, plays music you don't hear on most commercial stations. I'm a listener and supporter of Asheville FM, and I know they're ramping up publicity for your appearance at the Grey Eagle. What are your connections to Asheville? How many times have you played here before this show?
So I've only played Asheville once at Moakfest in 2011.
No, I mean you personally. You've played here
before. I mean personally. Okay.
Yeah, you personally. That's what I'm asking.
Okay. How many times have I played? I think twice or three or four times. I can't remember exactly. At Sally Sparks' house, and
yes.
Those are incredible experiences, because there is like this community of music lovers that comes together for these special house concerts, and the interesting thing is that like those shows are so special and so dear to me that. The recordings usually get released.
Yes.
Because there's something really special about the vibe. And you were talking about radio not playing progressive rock so much.
Mm-hmm.
and that you do have a great station there in Nashville. In Europe, and especially in Germany, like I don't know any radio station playing
That's
music.
Surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, it's surprising. I know, like, that the image that Americans have of European culture is very positive, but it's not the case necessarily. Like here in Germany, we don't have college radio, for example. It's never existed, right? And so I really do appreciate the opportunity to play in America, in the U.S., to actually have fans there. And it's a very, very special thing for me to have, fans that open their houses, to have me play living room concerts, house concerts. It's something really, really special, and it's not that common over here,
yes.
Unfortunately.
Mm. Other than the album you're going to be mixing while you're touring, what's next for you after the tour is over?
Yeah, I have started a new improvisational band last year called Anchor and Burden, and we're going to get together again in early June to record more music together. And that's really like a project that's very dear to my heart. I know that you're aware of Zentralzone, my project with Bernhard Rüsteiner. So Anchor and Burden is an extension of Zentralzone with using like an extra a touch guitarist and a drummer.
Mm.
And it's a project that's very, very dear to my heart, and I can't wait to go back into the studio for a day or two. And you know, like what usually happens with these projects is that in a day or two we can record like five hours of music, and most of it will get put out. So I'm it's wonderful once you've established like the skill to compose in the moment. That is a really, really powerful and wonderful state to be in, right? Like, because yes, you know how it is nowadays. It's can sometimes be very frustrating that the shelf life of some of a music release is like really short these days. And I don't mean that in terms of the quality of the music that people produce, but in terms of the attention span that people have. And so even though it's a little bit awkward in a way, but I have the skill to put out a lot of music and to create a lot of quality music, and I enjoy doing that, you know. So I enjoy recording and producing music. So I'm kind of lucky in that regard.
I'm looking
forward to Anchored Burden again.
Yeah. Well, I feel very lucky to have gotten a chance to record this interview, and I appreciate your time. And
thank you, Gary.
This will be on the radio a few times between now and your show here.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Gary. I didn't expect you to contact me about this. This is wonderful.